3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Exfabula!
True personal stories.
Exfabula!
Exfabula is a Milwaukee nonprofit committed to strengthening community bonds through the art of storytelling.
And it is Exfabula Radio, a part of Lake Effect Weekend on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bruce Winter. Leah Delaney, the co-founder of Milwaukee's Exfabula, always here on the weekends to join us. You guys had a story slam last week. We were talking about it. The theme was water. How'd that go?
It went really, really well.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was held at the Lakefront Brewery, which houses a bunch of people, and we sure did pack the house with a bunch of people. We had about 250 people,
nice.
And a lot of beer was flowing, and a lot of new storytellers were at this particular event. And I think the theme of water, it is a huge hot topic as of late, and it really lent itself to a lot of different stories. Very awesome personal stories were told.
And we look forward to hearing them on the radio in the future.
Why, yes, I would be obliged to do so.
All right.
So today the theme is education. So we thought we'd bring a couple of stories from two different perspectives, one from a parent perspective and then the other from a teacher. So let's roll right into them.
Yeah.
We're going to start today's show with a story that was told at our It's Complicated Story Slam back in November 2016. And this one is from Tony Anderson, speaking from the parent perspective.
I have two children. I have a 17-year-old son named Devin, and I have a 14-year-old daughter named Melissa. And I love them very dearly. And as far as I can tell, I think the feeling's mutual. During the last 17 years, our lives have had many twists and turns. I think back to the night that my son was born. I had a long talk with him, and admittedly, it was a bit one-sided, but I think he was there with me. I was looking at this brand new, beautiful person with a world of endless possibilities in front of them. And I started telling him about all of the opportunities that the world had, about the wonder of being out in nature, about the beauty of the Canadian wilderness. And I also talked to him about some serious stuff. I talked to him about college. And I promised him I would not pressure him into any jobs, but I did let him know that graduate school was in his future. Evan was a very happy and cheerful young man, and as he grew, we started to notice some things. As a baby, he was content to sit for long periods of time in the middle of his books, thoroughly losing himself in those picture books. And over time, we started to realize that even though this seemed like a great thing, hey, I could get a lot of work done because he was the perfect child. He was sitting there quietly and housework could get done. We realized that he was starting to pull away from us. He wasn't making eye contact the way that he used to. His language skills were not developing. And he was getting upset and having crying fits over sounds or situations that wouldn't seem to bother him. Along the way, he was enjoying his books, he was enjoying the animated programs that he was watching, and he loved the magnetic letters on our refrigerator. And one night, when he was about 2.5 years old, he pulled me into the kitchen and pointed at the refrigerator and showed me the letters that were up there. And it said D-O-R-Y, and I went, Dory? He shook his head and he frowned. And I thought for a minute, and all of a sudden the light went on. And I said, Dora, and he nodded vigorously. And I said, Dora the Explorer from your favorite show? And he nodded again. And while he couldn't say the words, he could spell them. And suddenly, there was an explosion of words, words that he was copying from his favorite books. And he was copying words like G-I-R-A-F-F-E, giraffe, or E-L-E-P-H-A-N-T, his favorite animals. And even though he couldn't say those words, he could spell them. But the words remained locked inside his head. The sentences remained locked inside his head. Well, eventually, my wife and I figured out what was going on. We went and got a diagnosis, and a new word came into Evan's world, A-U-T-I-S-M, autism. and our lives changed dramatically. Suddenly, our doors were opened to behavioral therapists who were in our home for up to 35 hours a week. And they became part of our family, and it almost seemed normal to have them there, especially for my young daughter, who thought it wasn't really fair that my son had these built-in companions to play with. Well, thanks to all of the hard work of the therapists and of the special education teachers, Evan's world has grown. His language skills have expanded. Now, traditional communication is still a challenge for him, but if you get him talking about his favorite topics, about animated shows, he will show you that he's a virtual encyclopedia of all of the things that he knows about the shows when they aired, who the voice actors are, the storylines, and the dialogue. He even has a pretty good ear for impressions. Recently, we started thinking about what life is going to be like for Evan when he gets out of high school. And we have been looking at colleges that offered life skills and job training. And we realize that there are very few of them that offer the support that he would need. But there are some opportunities out there. So that world of endless possibilities has changed, but there are still opportunities. It's just a bit complicated.
And that was Tony Anderson's story that he told originally at our It's Complicated event in November of 2016.
He was into that for about a minute, and I went, the child is autistic. Because he was just, he gave those obvious signs, you know. It's got to be difficult. It's got to be.
Truly. Yeah. So we have an interesting event coming up. It's called Text You Later, which is a storytelling and spoken word workshop for teens that's going to be held on March 4th. We're going to have instructors there and coaches to carve out your stories, whether they be spoken word or your real true personal stories, or maybe an amalgamation of both, and put it together on that day. So if you want more information about that, I would definitely recommend going to exfabula.org for that registration. So the next story we brought to the table is from one of our fellowship series events. And those who are not familiar with our fellowship series, these stories are told by people from Milwaukee who are bringing their personal stories to the table to inspire community discussions based upon some pretty harsh topics that need to be dealt in Milwaukee. So let's roll right into that story told at one of our fellowship events. The event was themed White Fragility, and let's listen to Susanna Bartlow's story.
So when I got the phone call, you know, when you get that feeling, you know right away that there's something different about this phone call, even if it's the same one that you've had 20 times before. It was on a Sunday night, and I had had conversations with my boss on a weekend before. I was the director of a gender and sexuality resource center at a Catholic school. So we talked on the weekends before. We'd had some issues. But I could tell there was just something different about this phone call. I could tell it more in the tone of his voice. And he asked me a couple questions. He said to me, first of all, whose idea was it to choose Asada Shakur? Now, Asada Shakur is a very well-known black activist from the 60s and 70s. She was falsely convicted of shooting a New Jersey state trooper. She's been living in exile in Cuba, and she's become kind of an icon for the Black Lives Matter movement. She also was someone that the students at my resource center had chosen as the subject of a mural that they wanted to do for community outreach. And we had a community artist who was working at the center who made a design, both of Asada Shakur and of Audre Lorde, and they chose between those two figures. And so when he asked me that question, there were a couple things inside that question. One of them was it you or was it someone else? And the other question was, why in the hell would you choose Asada Shakur? And so my answer to the question had to be very careful, where I said, well, I approved it. I approved the choice. I think it's a good choice, and it's what the students wanted. And the other question he asked me was, is it a problem? Would it be, you know, is there any reason that we should not paint over the mural? And of course, there were a lot of reasons running through my mind, but again, you know when you hear in someone's voice that there's only one possible answer to that question. And so if I was thinking between, you know, in my director head on a Sunday night, I was like, well, if it's either the center where we can keep doing ongoing work, or the mural, then I'm going to say, if that's what has to happen, that's what has to happen. So that was the conversation that I had with him on Sunday night. Now, I get in on Monday morning, and for the first time, and I can't tell you how long, I was there at 8:30. And so I get in on Monday morning, but as I'm walking down 15th Street, I see the community artist, who's the program assistant, who really did such a spectacular job with this project. And the students really did lead the experience, and we had all these beautiful conversations with one another, and the mural had been up for about 6 weeks when I had this phone call. So when I was walking in on 15th Street, I saw the artist leaving, and we had the kind of relationship, we had had this really beautiful collective management experience all year long, and the mural was in a lot of ways a culmination of the connection and the power that we had shared together. And as she was leaving, she looked like I had never seen her look before. She was looking down. She was very emotional. And she was on the other side of the street. And although, you know, every time we walk in, we say, oh, good morning. Hi, how are you? You know, we had that kind of connection. But this time I was like, she needs to walk. She needs to go. She's got to get out of here. And I knew why. Because she had walked into the office that we shared and seen a completely blank wall. So when I walked up and I saw the blank wall, I stood there, I took a picture of the blank white wall. The whole thing had been whitewashed. And then I, you know, sat down, and my boss called me a little bit after that, and we had another almost identical conversation. He asked me the same questions. I had a face-to-face meeting with him and someone from HR a couple hours later. I had a super productive day, because I was like, you know, if this is going to happen, I'm going to leave it just in order. And then I got called in about 4 o'clock that afternoon and I got fired. So one of the quotes on the mural was, no one is going to give you the education you need to overthrow them. No one is going to teach you your true history, teach you your true heroes. If they know that knowledge will help set you free.
So that was Susanna Bartlow's story, under the theme of white fragility, that she told at one of our fellowship series events. And March is going to be packed with a couple more of our fellowship series events, and we definitely want to make sure everybody in Milwaukee knows about these. These have been sold out, so to speak. They're free, but pre-registration is required, and it's caught in wind, so we definitely need to go to exfabula.org to pre-register ourselves. The next two events based on whiteness and privilege, and that's going to be on March 7th. And then Breaking Boxes, an identity summit, is going to be on March 12th. And so for all information regarding, please get to exfabula.org under our fellowship series program page. And the fellowship series and any workshops, everything.
All right.
All right there.
Speaking of audience favorites, you can hear this again and again at WUWM.com if you wish to listen again or listen for the first time. It's at WUWM.com. All of our ex-fabulous radio segments are there. Leah, thank you.
Oh, thank you.